Chapter 1. The Prodigal Song. The Nashville skyline shrank in Harper's rearview mirror like a dream dissolving at dawn. Each mile marker on I-40 East felt like another nail in the coffin of everything she'd built and lost over the past 12 years. The Honda Civic's engine wheezed its complaints about the 150-mile journey, a mechanical symphony that matched the protest in her chest. She'd traded her Range Rover 3 months ago when the repo notices started arriving. The Civic, bought with the last of her savings from a sketchy used car lot, had already developed a personality, stubborn, temperamental, and prone to dramatic rattling whenever she pushed past 60. Static crackled through the speakers as she searched for a station that would carry her through the dead zones between Nashville and Willowbrook. The scanner stopped on a country station, and her stomach clenched as the opening notes filled the car. Her voice, younger and full of hope, poured through the speakers. "I was 17. You were 18. Harper's hand shot out, jabbing the power button hard enough to hurt her finger. The silence that followed was worse than the song. It pressed against her eardrums, filled with the ghosts of sold-out stadiums and tour buses and Grammy nominations that had all turned to dust. 3 years since her last album tanked, 2 years since her label dropped her, 6 months since she'd sung anything more challenging than Happy Birthday at her roommate's party before that roommate had politely asked her to find somewhere else to live. The exit sign for Willowbrook appeared like a taunt. Welcome home to Tennessee's hidden gem. Population, 8,432, according to the last census, though Harper suspected that included the cemetery. She eased off the interstate, her hands tightening on the steering wheel as familiar landmarks emerged from the morning mist. Patterson's Dairy Farm still had the same red barn with the faded mail pouch tobacco ad painted on its side. The water tower still bore the ghost of Class of 09 rules in spray paint. Her class, though she hadn't stuck around for graduation. Main Street unfolded before her like a museum exhibit of her past. Miller's Hardware still anchored the corner of Main and 3rd, its green awning now more faded but otherwise unchanged. The window display featured the same arrangement of power tools and garden supplies that Mr. Miller had probably set up when Harper was in middle school. Next door, Boutique Bell had a going out of business sign, but that had been there when she'd left too. Some stores died slow deaths in Willowbrook. The Blue Note Cafe squatted in the middle of the block, its neon sign dark in the morning light. Harper's throat constricted, Tuesday open mic nights. Jake on guitar, her on vocals, back when they thought they were going to conquer the world together. Back when the biggest worry in her life was whether to wear the red sundress or the blue one to perform in. The cafe's windows were covered with flyers now. A church bazaar, someone selling a tractor, the high school's upcoming spring musical. She drove past without stopping, though her body remembered the magnetic pull of that place. Muscle memory of walking through that door, guitar case in hand, Jake's fingers intertwined with hers. The town square looked exactly as it had the day she'd left, the Confederate statue that everyone kept saying they'd vote about removing, the gazebo where the municipal band played on summer evenings, the benches where old men gathered to solve the world's problems. Even the parking meters were the same, though someone had finally fixed the one that used to eat quarters without registering time. Harper turned onto Maple Avenue, and her childhood home emerged from behind the oak trees that had grown taller but not different. The two-story colonial still wore its coat of white paint, though she could see places where it had started to peel. Her mother's garden exploded with color, cosmos and zinnias and roses that probably had names and pedigrees her mother could recite. The front porch sagged slightly on the left side, the same imperfection her father had been planning to fix for 20 years. She sat in the driveway for a full minute, engine running, considering the possibility of reversing right back onto the street. Back to Nashville. Back to what? The eviction notice on her apartment door? The bartending job she'd been fired from for missing too many shifts, the demo recordings that no one wanted to hear. The front door opened before she could decide. Her mother stood in the doorway, wearing the same style of cardigan she'd always favored, her hair more silver than brown now, but styled in the same careful waves. She didn't wave or call out, just stood there with her hands clasped in front of her, waiting. Harper turned off the engine. The Civic gave one last shuddering sigh and fell silent. The walk to the front door felt like crossing a decade. Her mother's face remained carefully neutral until Harper climbed the porch steps, and then something broke in her expression. Relief mixed with sorrow mixed with something Harper couldn't quite identify. "Hello, sweetheart," her mother said, and Harper was 17 again, scared and defiant and so sure she knew everything. "Hi, Mom." They stood there, not quite touching, until her mother stepped aside. "Come in. I've made coffee." The house smelled exactly the same. Lemon Pledge and whatever her mother was baking and that underlying scent of old wood and family history. The wallpaper in the foyer still featured tiny roses that Harper used to count when she was in timeout. The mirror by the door showed her reflection, and she almost didn't recognize herself. When had she gotten so thin? When had those lines appeared around her eyes? "Your father's in his study," her mother said, leading the way to the kitchen. "He'll be out in a moment." The kitchen had been updated. New countertops, granite instead of the old formica, but the bones remained the same. Her mother poured coffee from the same percolator she'd used Harper's entire childhood, the one that made aggressive burbling sounds like it was angry about its job. "You look tired," her mother said, which was her way of saying Harper looked terrible. "It was a long drive." "From Nashville? That's only 2.5 hours. Harper didn't correct her, didn't mention the 3 days she'd spent in a rest stop parking lot, working up the courage to make this drive. Didn't mention the months of slow collapse that had led to this moment, sitting at her mother's kitchen table like she'd never left, like she hadn't sworn she'd never come back. Her father appeared in the doorway, and Harper's chest tightened. He looked older, his hair completely gray now, deep lines around his eyes. He'd lost weight, his frame smaller inside his usual uniform of khakis and a polo shirt, former high school principal wardrobe even 5 years into retirement. Harper, just her name, but waited with everything they hadn't said in phone calls that had grown increasingly sparse over the years. "Hi, Dad." He sat down across from her, accepting the coffee mug her mother placed in front of him. The silence stretched, filled with the tick of the clock above the stove and the distant sound of a lawnmower. "How long are you staying?" her father asked, and Harper heard the real question underneath. "How bad is it?" "I don't know. A while." Her mother's hand fluttered near Harper's shoulder, not quite touching. "Your room is ready. I've kept it the same." Of course she had. Her mother had probably dusted those participation trophies and talent show ribbons every week for 12 years, waiting for Harper to come home. The weight of that dedication pressed against Harper's ribs. "I saw Jake yesterday," her father said, casual in that way that meant it wasn't casual at all, "at the grocery store." Harper's coffee mug hit the table harder than she intended, brown liquid sloshing dangerously close to the rim. "Oh? He's the music director at the high school now. Has been for 3 years. Built quite a program. They went to state competition last year." The music director, Jake Turner, who was going to be the next Brad Paisley, teaching teenagers to sing scales in the same choir room where they'd first kissed. Harper's stomach churned. "That's nice," she managed. "He married the Brennan girl. Sarah? No, Sandra. They have a little boy." The room tilted slightly. Harper gripped the edge of the table, focusing on the grain of the wood, the small burn mark from when she'd left a hot pan there in high school. "That's nice," she said again, because what else was there to say? That she'd thought about Jake at least once a week for 12 years? That she'd written 17 songs about him, though only one had made it onto an album? That sometimes she still woke up reaching for him? "They divorced last year," her mother added quietly, and Harper hated the small flame of something that flickered in her chest. "I should unpack," Harper said, standing abruptly. "I'm tired." Her mother nodded that careful expression back in place. "Of course. Do you have bags?" "Just one. I'll get it." The suitcase looked pathetic in the trunk of the Civic, one suitcase to show for 12 years in Nashville. She'd sold or abandoned everything else, the stage clothes, the expensive guitars, the furniture she'd bought when her first album went gold. This suitcase held jeans and t-shirts, and one nice dress she couldn't bear to part with, though she had nowhere to wear it now. Her childhood bedroom waited at the top of the stairs, preserved like a shrine to her teenage self. The bulletin board still displayed concert tickets and photos from high school. Harper and Jake at prom, Harper on stage at the Blue Note, Harper and her friends at the lake. The participation trophies from talent shows lined the bookshelf, along with her first guitar pick and the program from the school musical where she'd played the lead. The twin bed seemed impossibly small. She sat on the edge, the mattress creaking with familiar complaint. Through the window, she could see the Hendersons' house next door. The tire swing still hanging from their oak tree, though their kids had to be in college by now. Beyond that, Willowbrook spread out in all its small-town glory, unchanged and unchanging. Harper unzipped the suitcase, pulling out clothes that seemed to belong to someone else. Who was the woman who'd worn these? The one who'd thought she could make it in Nashville, who'd believed talent and determination were enough? At the bottom of the suitcase, wrapped in a t-shirt, was her one remaining award, a Country Music Association trophy for New Artist of the Year. She'd won it 6 years ago when everyone said she was the future of country music. She set it on the dresser next to her high school graduation photo, the one where she stood with Jake, both of them grinning like they had the world figured out. Her phone buzzed, a text from her mother, "Dinner is at 6. I'm making pot roast." Pot roast. Her favorite when she was a kid. Harper lay back on the narrow bed, staring at the ceiling where glow-in-the-dark stars still clung, their light long since faded. She'd have to leave the house eventually. Have to face the town, the questions, the sympathetic looks from people who'd watched her on TV and were now watching her slink home in defeat. And Jake. God, she'd have to see Jake. In a town this size, it was inevitable. At the grocery store, at the gas station, at the Blue Note if she was stupid enough to go there. Jake with his ex-wife and his son and his stable life teaching music to kids who probably had dreams just like Harper once had. She closed her eyes, but that was worse. Behind her eyelids lived the ghost of stadium lights, the roar of crowds, the weight of a guitar in her hands. The memory of who she used to be before it all fell apart. Tomorrow, she'd have to figure out what came next. Tomorrow, she'd have to start rebuilding something from the ashes of her Nashville dreams. But today, in this too small bed, in this too quiet town, Harper Reeves let herself admit the truth she'd been running from for months. She was home, and she had no idea what to do now.